All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310 is after news and names. Now, it was expected that literally minutes after whatever the Supreme Court is going to decide around 10 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow on the health care law, that every politician in the Western world would be issuing a statement. There have even been some politicians that recorded YouTube statements before they even knew what the court was going to say. But Carlos May today came out to talk about health care. In advance of the decision, things that could happen here in the state of Indiana. Carlos May is the Republican candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District. His first official appearance here as candidate. Welcome. Glad to have you.
Well, Amos, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Let me first ask our standard question with all candidates. Why are you running?
Well, really, there's one main reason. I just got tired of whining about what was happening in D.C., and I said, I'm going to do something. At the time, I didn't really know what it was I could do other than help, you know, with my job and the community and what I did. But then I decided I felt I could do a good job in D.C. I felt I could do a good job for the country, for the state, but most importantly for the residents of the 7th District. And so I thought, why not?
What kind of background and experience do you bring to this race, would you bring as congressman?
Multiple different types, I'd say. I have experience in the private sector, both nationally and internationally. Mm-hmm. I could give you a job resume, but that's not really, I guess, key. So I'll just highlight a few different things.
Okay.
I have worked in international management for a company called Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy. It's mm-hmm. a French luxury goods company.
Oh, yeah.
I was in charge of their West Coast distribution and operations. Specifically, I was based out of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I have also been in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. I was director of West Coast operations for Marathon Building Services, which is basically kind of a finishing construction company.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't go build the actual infrastructure. They go in and put the walls up and polish it up and make it look nice and pretty right before the end user picks it up. So we did things like the UCSD Medical Center, a few different military housing contracts for, you know, on base for the returning
right.
soldiers.
Right.
So I've done that locally. Small business consultant to some family-owned businesses on West Washington Street. I did mm-hmm. that for a while. So private sector, I have, I would think, a decent amount of experience for where I am in my life's journey right now. But government sector as well.
Right.
So what makes me, I think, unique amongst some candidates is that I actually have a working, functional knowledge of governmental systems here in Indianapolis. I was on the mayor's cabinet for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was one of the mayor's neighborhood liaisons for 2 years. So I've gotten a good... How shall I phrase it? A good look at the tree, but okay. at the same time, a good look at the forest.
Okay.
So I have a good, unique understanding of what the citizens of Indianapolis need and what they want, and I hope to be able to take that knowledge and further it.
You came out today talking about an option that the legislature put in place
mm-hmm.
if the Supreme Court carves up the health care law. What is that, and why should the community support it?
Well, at its most basic, it's what's called a health care compact.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me explain what that means. But before I do, let me say that I was the first and only candidate of any party anywhere in the state to mention this as a viable alternative.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks always say Republicans are just repeal and replace, but
mm-hmm.
they never give us an option for replace.
Mm-hmm.
I have proposed one. And this would work regardless of the outcome of at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would folks, I think, pay attention or should pay attention or maybe like this better than a federal driven healthcare mandate?
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost is that this is a plan that would be drawn up by Hoosiers for Hoosiers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not some politician in California or right. Nevada saying, this is what I want to see for Hoosiers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they probably never lived here. They probably mm-hmm. never visited here, and maybe the Super Bowl or the Indy 500. But that doesn't really give them a good in-depth knowledge of what makes Hoosiers tick and
mm-hmm.
what we need and what we want.
Mm-hmm.
So what this is at its most basic, it allows the states to join healthcare compacts.
Mm-hmm.
Now what that means, Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution allows states to join compacts for any given issue.
Mm-hmm.
And these issues, obviously this one is healthcare.
Like protecting the Great Lakes. I think there's a compact
yes,
for that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So really for any given thing that the okay. federal government doesn't have specific authorization to have charge of.
Okay.
So ours, we're talking about healthcare here. This would allow the state of Indiana, which they actually already passed the healthcare compact bill, which
mm-hmm.
is the HEA 1269.
Mm-hmm.
They signed it into law March 19th following the legislative session. That was the first step of the process.
Mm-hmm.
So that first step is good. The legislature, the citizens and the governor all thought that this was a good idea to be allowed to do this. The next step is at the federal level. I have already pledged to lead the charge to make sure that Congress basically allows what is already legal, allows the states to join a compact to chart their own destiny.
How would this the state compacts affect Medicare and Medicaid?
Not at all. As a state, when we implement this, if the federal government allows us to, we could use as much or as little of the federal Medicare and Medicaid plans that we so choose. So if you're a senior citizen, this will not be touched unless you yourself choose to expand or diminish what it is that you're using from the federal aspect.
How would the state compacts deal with people being denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions?
That also would be specifically decided at the state level. It would be Hoosiers deciding whether or not that would be something that we want. I'm all for opening up the insurance industry statewide. You know, basically, we have 50 different small monopolies. You only allow a certain healthcare provider to give you the insurance. This would open it up to you could go to California, you could go to Ohio, you could go to Florida, wherever is easiest and best for you to get that deal. You bring it back here. You say, I want that type of insurance, or you say, I don't want it. I want the healthcare compact insurance. It is at that point up to the state legislatures. Once the second step is done. The second step, as I started to get to, is the federal government authorizing states to do this.
Right.
The third and final step is letting the state then decide the details of that. If Hoosiers say, we want, and this would be done at the local community level, so it'd be the Indiana State Legislature deciding what is best for Hoosiers, not me or any other congressperson out in D.C. It'd be the folks right here that are at your most local level.
What happens to the uninsured? They would still, in this compact, remain uninsured, so their primary medical decisions would be done in the most expensive health care facility ever, and that's an emergency room?
Is that possible? Yes. Under my plan, that's not what I would ask the states to look at. But, of course, I can't tell the state legislature what to do. That would really be – we would need a groundswell. We would want – not just need. I think we would want a groundswell of Hoosiers to say, this is the type of plan that I want. Let me give you the corollary example. We had here in the past the Healthy Indiana program, a successful program. You know, folks liked it. Folks used it. It was valid, and it was – it was detailed for Hoosiers by Hoosiers. I mean, this was something that we made for ourselves. As soon as the federal mandates came in, the governor and the legislature here in Indiana said, if this passes, we're going to have to get rid of a viable program that has worked, which inevitably that's what happened. It would allow us to return to those types of programs because, again, we here in Indiana are deciding what Hoosiers are going to be getting. So as long as the people tell their legislatures, we want no pre-existing conditions, we want to open up to interstate buying insurance from out of state, you know, interstate lines on anything that we want, we can put into this bill. That's the beauty of it, is that we get to chart our own destiny. We're not going to have some politician who's never visited the state telling us how we're going to do it. A one-size-fits-all does not fit for
How do you fit into a compact? Let's say Indiana wants these things in the compact. Illinois wants something else. Kentucky, they're weird. They don't want anything. How then do you have a compact come together if each state's kind of different?
You don't need to join the compact in a state that you don't like.
Okay.
I mean, this is you could do a compact of two. It could be Illinois and Indiana. It could be a compact of 20. As it stands today, Indiana, Utah, South Carolina, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Georgia.
That is a strange group.
It is. They have enacted at the state level, which is the first step of this process. They have already enacted laws saying we want to be or we want to be able to have a healthcare compact. Now, we don't have to join with any of these, or we can join with all of them. Really, again, that's driven by what we need and what we want at the state level. It's removing decisions from folks that are far removed from Indiana and putting it back into the hands of Hoosiers.
Would it also be that the monies devoted to Medicaid or to health care would come, as I'm reading this information, correct me if I'm wrong, these monies would, I think, add up to right now $17 billion, would come as a block grant?
Right.
So, am I understanding that?
Yes, that's correct. Basically, so that folks that are listening can understand, we already send X amount of money, in this case $17 billion as of fiscal year 2010. That's where I got this number from, that you and the audience understands, the 2010 fiscal year. So we sent approximately $17 billion to the federal government to institute and run a whole host of health care issues, not just the Medicare, Medicaid.
Right.
We would get that money if we so chose and if Congress allowed us to get mm-hmm. to do this, you know, we would get that money returned to us so that we could spend it here. Right now, Indiana is a donor state when it comes to taxes. So mm-hmm. for every dollar that we send out, we only get back approximately 80 cents, you know, depending on the time of year and the year, but about 80 cents on average. Why wouldn't we want the full dollar back? And then we can spend that dollar on our own citizens the way we see fit for ourselves.
Some of those $17 billion go to specialized health programs funded by, you know, federal dollars that are used in states, you know, whether it is programs from the Minority Health Coalition or programs at county health, county or city health departments mm-hmm. dealing with specialized health problems. What keeps in your plan, your idea, this health compact, what keeps the legislature from saying, you know, we really don't want to do HIV testing. We really are concerned with somebody in a county, you know, doing syphilis testing or those kind of things. Do we really want, you know, the guy that didn't like the Girl Scouts making a decision on my health care?
Well, I don't want those types of peoples to make decision on my health care. And the beauty of this type of program is you can stay as engaged or mm-hmm. as little engaged in the federal programs as you so choose as mm-hmm. an individual or also as a state. So just because we're allowing states to chart our own destiny does not mean that we are giving over full rights and responsibilities. If we like what's going on with the federal Medicare and Medicaid programs, we can still be a part of that. If we don't like it, we don't have to. But again, the choice is at the individual level made by themselves for themselves. It's not being made by others for them. And those others generally right now, as of today, that are making those decisions are folks that aren't even in Indiana.
239-1310, 239-1310's afternoon's names. We're talking with Carlos May, the Republican candidate for 7th District Congress. He always, you know, all these candidates, this is your opportunity to talk to them. And of course, his baptism of fire, it's Larry at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
You know, it's not funny. This is the irrelevancy we have to put up with every time our congressman is out to be reelected. Now, Carlos doesn't have a clue. He's thinking about the founding fathers. There's three and a half billion people in this country, in this over a billion people in the United States. If we have something as crucial as health care, you don't want it to be decided by a state legislature because they have too many special interests within that state. And they're too close. We need a comprehensive program with our health care if we need it anywhere, because people's lives are on the line. What he's talking about is the founding fathers. That's what he's talking about. That's irrelevant. Today, it's a totally different paradigm, a totally shift to something where we must have a uniform health care program where everybody's included. Nobody's sitting out there from one state saying, we're going to let the poor die. We're going to let these poor people go ahead and, on a day like today, just suffocate in their apartment so that we don't have to give them any care. That's what he's advocating
for. All right, Larry, let me let Carlos May respond.
Yeah, a couple things, Larry. I guess you and I just disagree fundamentally on paying attention to the document that created our nation. But to a couple of specific points, there are only about 300 million people in the U.S., not a billion. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about a billion people. Second off, do we have uniform car insurance? Do we have uniform educational standards? No. We let that be driven at a local level to be decided upon. Various states have different mechanisms of what they require for car insurance, even within Indiana. You know, I think up in Lake County, you got to have some emission permit before you can even get your registration. Right. You don't need that here in Indianapolis. Just because it's not uniform from state to state doesn't mean it's not valid for the people of that state. All I am saying, yes, am I bringing in the founding fathers? Yes, I'll be blunt about that because I do believe in the history of this nation. I believe in our destiny and our dreams and our desires. And what has enabled that, what has made us the greatest nation on this planet, is the Constitution, because it allows its citizens opportunities no other nation does. So I certainly bring that in.
Let me go to Grace at 239-1310. Okay. See, you woke them up. They're ready for you. Let me go to Grace at 239-1310. Hi, Grace.
Hi, Mr. May. Thanks so much for being on today and talking about health care.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in.
I had a question, though. I was wondering if you agree or disagree with the privatization of Social Security, kind of what your thoughts on that are.
flat-out privatization, probably not. But I do know that Social Security is an unfunded liability. Right now, more money goes out than comes in. By definition, if I only have a dollar salary, but I'm spending $2, you know, a year. Let's say my salary is a dollar a year, and I'm spending $2 a year. Well, you know, that money is going to disappear, even with credit. Mm-hmm. We have got to restructure it. Now, am I an expert on this? Absolutely not. Anybody who tells you they're an expert on every given subject is exaggerating flat out. What I do know is that this is going to be an unfunded liability. It will go bankrupt. We need to make hard choices. And unfortunately, hard choices will affect someone. Now, let me give you just a general example that I would use for myself. I'll be 33 years old, well, in about a week and a half. Mm-hmm. I would be willing to say I will continue to pay into Social Security for the rest of my life, but I and those that are of my generation and below me will no longer be able to take out of it. In about 10 or 15 or 20 years, 30 years, or maybe even with advances in healthcare and longevity of genes, you know, maybe 40 years even. Mm-hmm. But the last of the standard Social Security recipients, the way the program is structured now, would no longer be with us. They would have moved on to the next stage. We can now take that modification and run it because we are no longer relying on the same pattern of action, which what we have seen is that same pattern of action is leading us into bankruptcy. So do I have a specific concrete plan on what we should do? No. I'm smart enough to know that I need to get people that are smarter than me to help me guide this process along. But I do know that this is going to be an issue that we must look at in a realistic way.
Appreciate the call. Let me go to Victor at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Brown and Mr. May. Listen, I got a comment. First of all, I wanted to get further clarification. But in reference to the compact that you were talking about, mm-hmm. my concern is you mentioned a certain dollar amount coming back into the state. So what type of safeguards would be in place to ensure that those medical issues that that represent a certain type of people or that are pertaining to a certain type of people would be covered under that, and that more dollars wouldn't be allocated towards some other interest? How do you ensure that everybody's going to be taken care of when you're only talking about a certain dollar amount coming back and all the multitude of health different problems and plans and federal we have?
Yeah. Great question. That's why we have the smartest talk show audience in the whole country. Great question.
That's
Carlos
right.
May.
No, that is an excellent question. And the fact of the matter is, can I guarantee everything and anything? No. What I can say, however, is that the beauty of this program allows Hoosiers to understand and know what needs they have. So we might have specific health care needs that someone or that a group of people in Florida do not have. Well, yeah, let me pick on Florida for a second. Florida has a huge amount of retirees, mm-hmm. a lot more than Indiana. I think that's pretty mm-hmm. common knowledge. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anything that's right. crazy out there. Their health care needs are far different than ours are here. We have a lot of farms, a lot of rurals. Maybe our injuries, our accidents, our health care needs are going to be far different than those in Florida. So obviously a Florida mechanism isn't going to work here in Indiana, just like an Indiana mechanism wouldn't work in Florida. So again, the beauty of my program, or at least what I would propose, is that we as Hoosiers and the state legislators, the governor, the lieutenant governor, everyone and anyone who's in the state house and the state senate would have an option to hear from their constituents to know what the needs of their communities are specifically here. And then those legislators can craft the specifics of the bill, of the health care, of what we're going to take care of for our citizens based on our needs. I mean, I guess let me finalize and summarize that by saying I would much rather have Hoosiers making decisions for Hoosiers mm-hmm. than non-Hoosiers making decision for Hoosiers.
Thank you, Victor. I appreciate it. Okay, real quick.
My concern is that when you get a group of lobbyists together that can influence the legislators, now we're talking about the same type of stuff we have in Washington.
Yeah, and, yep. you know, lobbyists,
you're
absolutely
point.
Right, you know, but I think part of the thing is we as citizens then need to stand up and say, no, this is what we need. Talk to the legislators. The best way to diminish the influence of lobbyists is to vote out the incumbent. I mean, if they're no longer in office, they can't sway. You know, it's going to be a new person in there, and maybe they're going to be a little, maybe they'll have more integrity, more common decency. You know, who knows?
Right. Appreciate it, Victor. Let me go to Jasmine right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hi, we're fine.
I actually was able to observe some of the session about the compact, and it does seem to me that for it to be effective, then it would require that multiple states would be united. That's the whole premise of it. And then that we will be bound to whatever is decided by the group of states that are a part of it. So I don't know how much better it will be than what the federals will come up. But my question actually is, I hear a lot of discussions about how the current healthcare plan has been so horrible. What is it specifically, Carlos, that you take issue with that you feel makes it not viable to serve the people of Indiana?
The first thing is we are having the government tell us that we have to purchase something specifically, something that might not even be good for us. What's next? The federal government telling us you have to buy cell phones. And not only that, now you have to buy AT&T cell phones and you have to get a specific plan. I mean, where does the slippery slope end? That's the first thing I have wrong with it. Second thing that I don't like about it is, like I said earlier, we're having people from California, from Nevada, from Ohio telling Hoosiers what is best for them. I don't know about you, but I don't know what's best for someone from San Francisco, and I can guarantee you that they don't know what is best for me here in Indianapolis. So that's the second thing I've got wrong with it. The third thing is more of an esoteric, or it's more of a blanket. This is what I don't think government needs to be doing. Where in the Constitution does it say that the federal government is in charge of health care? It does not. If we are true about keeping our principles and ideals as Americans, we have to understand that just because we can ask the government to do something doesn't mean that they should be doing
it.
But
wait a minute. The Constitution does not say that we have to protect food and drugs.
I would
say
that.
Yet we do that, and that's something the American people want to make sure when they take medicine that it's safe, when they go to the grocery store to buy something that it's safe.
Absolutely.
And the founding fathers didn't write that line in there.
No, they didn't say that specific line. They didn't say a lot of specific lines, but they weren't a dumb group of people. They did give us the Article 1, Section 8, the specific enumerated powers of the federal government. Mm-hmm. They gave us Article 1, Section 9 to allow the states to petition the federal government for these types of health care compacts or any type of compact. But they also gave us the 10th Amendment, which allows states to do whatever it is necessary that the federal government hasn't done. Matt, to your point, Amos, on the FDA stuff, that I would say goes to national security. If we're having a bunch of bad drugs getting shipped around the country and half the country dies within a day, mm-hmm. I mean, our national security is going to go down. I would say that rubric fits under there. But also, are we living in a land that is 200 years old? No. You know, we're living in the modern day. So I think we also need to look at this with a little bit of common sense. What happened to using common sense when coming up with ideas and discussions? And this is part of why I'm here on the radio. I want to hear this input from everybody. Because like I said, the one thing I know for a fact is that I don't know everything. I need input. I need this.
And I wanted to be respectful of your time because when we set this up, your folks said you had to run out of here at 2. If you can hang for a little bit. How you doing?
The next meeting isn't until 2:30, so I can hang in.
You can hang for a little
minutes,
bit and allow us to take a break. Folks want to talk to you because it's about them.
That's right.
And plus, you want to talk a little bit about – he wants to go everywhere, Chris.
I want to try.
He wants to have a debate in every township, so that's 9. He wants Goliath to do one who has never done a debate. This I got to see. Goliath's never done a debate. I've done three. Plus one on TV. Goliath has never done one, so I'm up on Goliath. So if you can get Goliath to do a debate. And then, of course, there'll be a 7th District debate on this station sometime this fall. But anyway, we'll take a break. Come back with more with Carlos May, the Republican candidate for Congress in the 7th Congressional District. His afternoons with Amos after these. Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoons with Amos. He's Carlos May, the Republican candidate for 7th District Congress. His first appearance here, and with all of our candidate interviews, you'll get to hear them on praiseindy.com. Live and then after the fact. Anyway, before I get back to the callers, we got a lot of callers and they're curious and we appreciate you being here. You issue I don't think it's a challenge, but you ideally would like a debate or a joint campaign appearance in each of the 9 townships here in Marion County because the 7th district impacts all 9 townships as well as one with the guy with the cowboy boots downtown that doesn't ever do anything. And on this program, maybe with one of the television stations as well. Are you getting any indications that there's 2 candidates officially in this race, you and the incumbent congressman? They're counting the signatures downtown for Mahoja Ajabu, and we should know in a few days whether he formally qualifies for the mm-hmm. ballot. What's the purpose of 9 to 13 appearances?
Well, at its most basic is we have a brand new district. We have a brand new district with brand new voters that don't even know or didn't realize that the redistricting process put them somewhere new. The example I give, pre-primary, when I was out knocking on doors, hundreds of people would say, well, no, you're in the wrong area. You know, I'm in Dan Burton's district, or I'm in Todd Rokita's district. Yeah.
Right.
No, actually, you are now in the 7th district. Well, heck, I didn't know that. So the main point of this is to get these new people, these new voters, and potential new voters that are registering now for, you know, the general election campaign to meet us. This allows me to campaign in a manner so that voters can get to know who we are, what we stand for, and for most of these, this will be the first time they ever hear from us. Now, the point of going to all 9 townships is that in the past decade worth of the 7th district, not every township was included the entirety of it.
Right.
There was little chunks here and there, you know. Right. Now we've got the entire southern township of Perry, Franklin, Decatur, the middle chunk of Center, Warren, and Wayne. The northern chunk is now where it's still, you know,
divided up, but significant portions.
But yeah, but it's significantly different though. And so I think part of our jobs, I liken this to a job interview.
Right.
And so I'm going out there and meeting with my potential bosses. I know that it's impossible for me to meet with each and every single one of you, but I want to reach as many as possible to understand where I'm coming from, what I would like to do for them, and also to get their input. Because again, I am here to represent them. In order to represent them, I need to know what it is that they want, what it is that they need, what it is that they think.
Let me ask you, in a lot of those townships, there would be established neighborhood organizations or area organizations that normally would sponsor candidates night, like Meridian Kessler, like the Nora area, McKenna, or some of the others. Could those things that normally are done in the scope of campaigns be incorporated into what you're talking about?
I don't see why not. I mean, the point is to get
out there
and meet the voters. Yes, absolutely. We could do it at the John Boehner Center, at Christmore House. You know, we could do it at established community centers. We could do it at established neighborhood associations or established business associations. I mean, I'm less concerned about the specific location and more concerned about reaching as many people as possible.
One of the problems in a congressional race in years past with ideas like yours has been the Congress worked most of the summer. The Congress works late into the fall. But as I understand it, I think the Republican majority in the House, Speaker Boehner, wants to he's letting everybody go in August. I think he wants very little in September and then let everybody go. So will the fact that the House will be out most of the fall campaign season, you know, help in terms of all the candidates are available, where some years it hasn't been that way?
I am very cognizant of the fact that Congressman Carson has to be in D.C. to make votes. I know that he has a schedule and he needs to keep it, especially when he's not in the district. But there are over 3,100 hours of campaign time left. I'm just asking for 13. I don't think that that's unreasonable.
You done counted the hours already, Chris.
And I am more than happy to work the schedule around what is easiest for him when he's going to be in the district. I just don't think 13 out of 3,100 hours is that many.
Why do I have the feeling they're listening to this and taking notes? 239-1310. Back to the phones and anonymous. Hi there.
Yes, I have a question I want to ask you very there's a lady here in my apartment building that stays here, and you were talking about the health care issues. Now, this lady has cancer, and she's trying to apply for her disability, Social Security. She was going off to Wishart Hospital, and they turned her down. They turned her down because she didn't have the proper insurance.
Wait, hold it. Hold it a minute. You're telling me a lady went to Wishart Hospital?
Yes.
And she was getting treatment or an operation, and they turned her down because she had no insurance.
They gave her the treatment at Wishart, and they sent her over to IU because they found cancer in her body.
Okay.
Wishart couldn't treat her, so that's why they sent her to IU for the chemotherapy. Well, her insurance, she didn't have any insurance, so they turned her away, and she's trying to get her disability so she can get Medicaid or Medicare.
Wait a minute. Now, the disability to get Medicaid or Medicare, is it Medicare? Is she over 65?
Yes, she's trying to get both of them.
Hold on. Medicaid is the state. That's FSSA.
Okay,
Medicare is Social Security.
She's applying for her Social Security disability. She got a lawyer.
So she's not 65 then on disability is for under 65.
She's about 58.
No, then okay. Like how many times has she applied for Social Security disability?
Her lawyer is helping her now.
Yeah, but how many times has she or the lawyer applied for Social Security disability?
Well, I don't know about all that.
The only reason I ask that is Social Security turns you down two or three times before you get the disability.
Oh, well, the reason why I'm calling Mr. Mays is I want to know, what is he going to do about people that can't get on the Advantage program or can't get any type of medical help? You know, if they don't have any insurance.
All right, Carlos May, you got this one.
Well, this is precisely where my Indiana Healthcare Compact would come into play. We would allow the state legislators here to decide what is best for Hoosiers, taking into account stories like this, examples like this. My proposal isn't going to detail every single thing that Indiana should do. What it's going to do is allow Indiana to take care of everything it needs to take care of. So my plan is to get – if I were to win the campaign in November, my plan in order to help this individual out would be to go to the federal Congress and say we need to make sure that we allow states to chart their own destiny. Now, we will be able to find out with much more specificity by tomorrow once the Supreme Court rules on that. But my plan would still be in play. Once I lead the charge at the federal level, it comes back to the states. And again, the state legislature at that point decides – what do we need in Indiana that best fits our Hoosier brothers and sisters?
But let me go back. Here's a lady who right now is technically uninsured. And a hospital that is nonprofit receives federal research funds, receives our state tax dollars, turns her away because of no insurance, and I know doggone well IU Hospital has a reserve for the uninsured. Are you concerned that how do we make sure these things don't fall through the cracks?
Well, we have a representative who is accessible and amenable to helping. You know, what can I do at this exact moment? Nothing.
I know you're listening.
Yeah, I have no authority. I got no power. I got no nothing. I'm trying to get to a position where I can help. If she's having problems with the federal government, I'd recommend one of three things. Go talk to Congressman Carson, go talk to Senator Lugar, or go talk to Senator Coates. They are the federal representatives that represent the folks here. They're the ones. This is their job. Their job is to represent the folks here in Indiana at the federal level. If there is a federal issue that they're having, that's the first place they need to go.
Well, I was reluctant to give out Congressman Carson's number while you're sitting here. I was trying to be respectful.
Oh, no, that's fine. I'll plug him. I mean, he is a sitting congressman.
Ma'am, anonymous.
Chemotherapy.
Anonymous. Call the Congressman Carson's office.
Okay.
283-6516. They have already heard this conversation. I know they're listening over there. Okay? Because they listen most every day.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. How important is constituent service going to be if you're elected?
That's going to be my top thing. I've already said that accessibility has got to be the number one priority of any representative. The job definition is contained in the title. You are there to represent. How can you represent if you're not in and amongst the community? Here's what I propose. Here's what I would do if the election were today and I won, and here's what I would do starting tomorrow. First thing, mobile constituent services. A lot of folks either don't have cars or they have some sort of handicap that doesn't allow mobility, ease of mobility. So I'm going to have a mobile constituent service van. Their job, and it'll be posted on the websites. It'll be given to folks like you so that everybody knows the schedule. We will go around every day and get whatever needs resolved from the constituents. That's the first thing. Second thing, open office hours. I can't overemphasize this enough. There will be a set period of 2 to 3 hours a day where I will be in my office. You know, if you need to come talk to me, you can. Now, obviously, logistically, I can't have 50 people in the office at once. So you might have to wait in the lobby while I help one person. But every day, you can call in and say, I would like to meet with my congressman today. Okay, our office open office hours are from X time to X time. Come on in. We can even give them numbers to make it go easy. Third thing that I would do is every month I would hold, you know, Congress on your corner, for lack of a better term. Maybe I'll think of a much better.
Gabby Gifford's probably going to charge you for that.
Oh, that's where I heard that one. Yeah, okay.
That's her thing.
So we don't have to call it that. We can call it
the Gabby Giffords. There you go. The Gabby Giffords Congress on your corner.
Yeah, or kind of like what the mayor does. The mayor's nights out. We can call it Congressional Night Out. I mean, the name is not as important as what it does. What it does is we would have a public meeting in each township every month, so that folks could come out and hear. And it's not going to be a town hall where I'm sitting there talking to them.
Right.
It's going to be where they're giving me questions, I'm answering, they're giving me their concerns, I'm taking it down, and that's part of constituent services. I want to be the most accessible congressperson in the history of Indiana.
Let me go to Taylor. Taylor, thanks for waiting at 239-1310. Hi there. Taylor? Taylor going once. Taylor going twice. We move on to Barbara at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
Mr. Faith. I have a question then a comment. The lady that was just speaking about her neighbor in the building.
Yeah.
I really don't understand why, Mr. Mays, why in the world would you be against the Obamacare? It's just four things just like what that lady was describing, which I was going to say something to that effect. I work in the health care. I see that all the time. A lot of people don't go to the doctors because they don't have the money to pay out of fear of being sued. And if you don't have insurance, a lot of times you are turned away. That health care plan would just assure that everyone would be able to have some type of health insurance. And besides that, why would you be against, and then also Mitt Romney, you are riding right along with him. He's against the Obamacare, but he was not against having health care when he was governor in his state. He made sure all of his people had health insurance. So that sounds like a big contradictory to me.
Let me let Mr. May respond.
I'll comment on that. First, I want to say I am not against people getting health care. I'm against Obamacare, not for what it stands, but for how it's being implemented and the costs associated with it. That's what I'm against, the specifics. Now, when you say you don't understand how I can be lockstep with Romney on this, as I stated, I'm the first and only candidate anywhere to be talking about this healthcare compact. Mm-hmm. And when you reference that at that point in time, Governor Romney did his bill. That's exactly what I'm talking about. He did something that might have been against his personal political beliefs, but that his state needed, and he did it. And he took a bunch of flack for it. You know, that's what I find funny, is he did something that was beneficial for his state. It went against his party's principles, but his state needed it, and he did it. And now he's getting thrown that back into his face. Well, I am against a federal takeover of health care. I am not against states charting their own destiny. If what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts was best for those people at that time, I am glad he did it. What I am focused about, what I'm concerned about, is Indiana, not Massachusetts.
Let me go to Anonymous right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine.
How's your guest?
He's okay.
Good. I have a comment. I don't claim to know anything about the Constitution except the preamble, and I don't know anything about the whether the founding fathers were intelligent or not. All I do know is they had slaves, and I question their moral ethics, and I don't understand your basic rights and wrongs. Their basic rights and wrongs here. A lot of people cannot pull themselves up, quote unquote, on their own bootstraps and make themselves go forward intellectually, but they do know how to survive. There are a lot of people who cannot. Don't know how to get a degree or anything because their parents didn't know how to get a degree, and the parents before them. A lot of people can help their situations. Middle class people cannot help the fact that they fall through the cracks because the system, the work that's going on right now with not Obama, but with whatever his name is. I don't understand where you're coming from, sir.
Certainly, and I guess I'll comment generally on that. As far as the founding fathers owning slaves, you know, that's a product of their time. We can look back in history many, many thousands of years in history. Slaves were always a part of of life. I'm not saying that that's right. I don't think it's right. I want to be very clear about that. I'm bringing up historical context here. You know, in Greece, in ancient Greece, it used to be okay to keep a house slave for sex. You know, we don't do that anymore. So my point to saying this is that times change, morals change. So when the founding fathers created this nation, they didn't do it for reasons of slavery. They did it for reasons of taxation and representation. Now, when you fast forward a few years, Lincoln, the first Republican, he fought a war to make sure slavery ended. After that, it was the Southern Democrats who didn't want civil rights. It was the Southern Democrats who didn't want desegregation. It was the Southern Democrats who fought all of that. Times change, people change, ideals and morals change. I can't comment on people that lived 250 years ago because, quite frankly, I wasn't alive back then. I'm only 32. I'll be 33 next month. What I can talk about is what I would do from here moving forward. As I stated, I am not against people needing health care and us helping that. I would like the process, though, to abide by our nation's laws.
Raymond will be our last caller with Carlos May. Raymond?
Carlos, hi. I would like to ask you a question regarding the health care that's going to be decided on shortly. I wanted to ask you, many times I've heard that it's based on the comparison is based on merchandise and plans that are merchandise, but when talking about human beings, how do you compare that to, like, cell phone plans or other things as far as health care is concerned when we're looking at higher obesity, they're looking at in the future nutrition programs, and you're saying state by state. But isn't it better to have a uniform policy so that we all move forward together, and if one state opts out, then that state's not moving forward, and one state is when it comes to having uniform nutrition programs, obesity, different areas of health that need focus now, and it seems like it's better to have a uniform policy to move the nation forward as opposed to give everyone these bracketed things they can and cannot do.
Great question. And in theory, sir, I agree with you. The problem is that theory and practice are rarely the same. Let me take a very recent example. New York just said you can't buy a soda that's over 32 ounces. So when you go get the big gulps from the 7-Eleven that are 64 ounces, those are now illegal. Obesity is a big problem. What's to stop them from just buying two? You know, did they solve the problem? No, all they did was just make one extra step. Imagine if that were to happen here in Indiana. Would you like that? The government here in Indiana telling you what you can and cannot buy? I don't know if you agree with that or not. It's just an example I'm bringing up. But aside from that, the main issue that I have with this one size fits all, we already have a $15 trillion national debt. This plan, because they are trying to shoehorn one shoe onto a size of a foot that it might not fit, is going to cost us a heck of a lot more money already. If we're already in debt, we're going to add another $5 trillion, and we don't even know the exact cost of the Affordable Health Care Act. That's where I start to take issue with it.
All right, Carlos May, our standard closing question with all candidates on the ballot. If people want more information about your campaign, he's the Republican candidate for 7th District Congress. How do they get a hold of you?
A few different ways. They can just go to my website. It's just carlosmay2012.com. That's CARLOSMAY2012, the numbers.com. All of my phone numbers and email addresses are listed right there. You can call me. You can email me. Whatever's easiest. Coming up soon, we're going to put a calendar of events on there so you can see exactly where I'm going, and then you can come talk to me personally.
Is there going to be a Carlos May 2012 booth at Indiana Black Expo?
I don't believe you allow specific politicians that are campaigning that are not incumbent office holders, but if they
will allow...
Yes, they're there all the time. Well, then I will certainly make it a point to be there.
That's all that's in the exhibit hall on Saturday is candidates. Carlos May, the Republican candidate for 7th District Congress. He'll be back between now and Showtime, November the 6th. Thanks very much for being with us.